From mountain crest to mountain crest, from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and this is Joshua P. Warren, speaking of strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and most intriguing guests. We are the favorite program of hootenoggers, wendigos, skunk apes, and donkey devils. So keep it tuned right here. Proud to have in our presence Daniel Hurst and Christian McLeod. Gonna drop some knowledge on us, because if I were to talk to you about cryptids, it would be a lot of secondhand, a lot of pretending to keep the dialogue running. Occasionally, I will brief myself on a certain case, especially if it's got local historical interest. The donkey devil, the said donkey devil, 115 years ago around Asheville, there was supposedly a donkey that would appear in the Valley Street neighborhood standing on two legs. Most people agree that it was a it was kind of harkened back to, as distasteful it is for folks to even imagine it today, harkened back to sort of Ku Klux Klan to chase the local African Americans away from the polls, because the donkey devil would show up around election time in these black neighborhoods, and then the whispering campaign would be that, oh, he's out to get black folks who are going to the polls. So the donkey devil was a racist old devil, but he reared his ugly head around election time to keep the black folks from voting. So anyway, that's the donkey devil. But before the specifics of the donkey devil, which they say was actually a man in a donkey hide with the head still attached to it. Can you imagine skinning a donkey and wearing its hide with its head down over your face? Wait, oh, my word.
How did
word.
That smell?
Wearing a donkey hide around walking up and down Valley Street and on the Bowcatcher Ridge in 1906. Yeah, that was different times, thankfully. but the donkey devil, initial reports thought that he may have been the Santer, which was a Iredell County big cat, a black panther sighted around Iredell, and they said that the Iredell Santer had run off with infants, had taken small babies away into the woods and had himself a feast.
That's a common thread with a lot of cryptids.
That they
Bigfoot,
steal babies.
Yeah, wendigos, skinwalkers, everything.
Well, even the big birds.
Mm-hmm. Thunderbirds. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even the idea that eagles and condors and some known large birds carrying off babies, but I don't know if we have accounts of that actually happening.
Apparently, they can lift like 30. I saw this on TV once, that they can lift like 30 pounds, because it was like one of those, you know, was it real shows where they like baited like a weight and waited for a bird of prey to come in and pick it up, and it was like 30 pounds.
Oh, so they actually like put a baby out.
Well, I didn't want to say that. They put something out there, but it was, you know, it's, I don't like thinking like that. But yeah, that's like a common thread in most cryptid tales when it comes to, there's either punishment or some kind of lesson to be learned, like the Sukaloo. Anytime they, or you know, they're talking about the Sukaloo, it was he was a trickster, couldn't be trusted. He basically knew the outcome of anything he was going to present them. So, I mean, it, all mythology, it never ends well for the human or the child, the human child,
right,
specifically. Wow. They always get one over on us.
Of course, there's always the interesting stories about the kid who was raised by wolves. That's a pretty common
I don't know, that
thing.
Jungle Book. I don't.
Yeah, it's the whole Jungle Book thing.
I don't know where Rudyard Kipling got that idea. I mean, it was pretty good, but, you know, I just don't, know how it always, every time I ever heard something like that, I was like, okay, how would he survive the winter?
Are there any legitimate wild boy stories?
Not that I'm aware of. And the ones that I've heard, like, of course, there's been, okay, like, you know, Tarzan is allegedly based on something that kind of happened like that, where some great apes had a kid for maybe like 6 months, 3 months, something like that, allegedly. I don't know where Edgar Rice Burroughs got it, but I mean, you know, but again, I just don't see it happening. I just don't think a human being has the genetic fortitude. You know, if he gets cold, there's no, he doesn't, we don't have fur, we can't see at night, we don't have retractable claws, you know, we can't eat a lot of stuff, you know. So, I mean, I just don't see it happening.
Hmm.
I think we'd be lunch before we'd be, you know, kinfolk.
Right. Well, let's get on to the Bigfoot a little bit. You spent some time in the field.
Yes, I have. Many hours out in the woods.
I mean,
looking.
Is the sort of information, you know, that you've personally accumulated, is that proprietary? Are you a little bit cautious about how you share that information?
When I take information from somebody, I never, ever reveal their name.
Right.
I type it up, and it goes on a flash drive, and it doesn't go into a database because I don't, you know, anything can happen on the computer. And I never, even when I do that, I still don't, you know, they're assigned a number. I don't give names. I don't discuss anyone's personal information, you know. And I tell them when they come to me with something, it's strictest confidentiality. And that's how I do. That's just how I do it. Because I don't want anyone to feel like they have to worry about their reputation. You know, you say, "Hey, I saw Bigfoot last night out my back window." You know, people are still going to look at you like you're crazy. You know, and that's just the way you have to do it. I'm a firm believer that you have to give people the ability to want to come talk to you. And they have to feel safe.
And if and when you broadcast or share reports like this, are you a little bit vague about location?
Oh, yeah.
And
I mean, the funny thing is, you know, Vance, I've actually got maps in my little binder here that I could show you. But
not for public consumption.
Not for public consumption. You know, and I just do it as kind of a reminder because they're vague enough where someone could see it, but they wouldn't really know. It's you know, I give generalities. Like one of my favorite ones is you know, we were talking about JPW, Joshua P. Warren, earlier, and when Josh and I were doing the van tour, we were scouting out locations, and he was in Puerto Rico at the time, so I was just here, and I wanted to do some locations off the Appalachian Trail for realism. You know, we wanted some places that there's been real sightings, so I said to myself, well, my wife had flown to Florida for the weekend, and I got in my car, and I drove to the Appalachian Trail area, and I literally broke every law there is when you go out cryptozoology, or when you go out hunting, cryptozoology, I don't even know what to call it, when I go out investigating, I guess. I don't like that word, investigating, when you're talking about cryptids, because you really can't investigate a cryptid that you don't know if one's there. You're investigating the area, so I just kind of like call it Bigfooting. Or
can we call it field work?
I broke every rule of crypto field work, including not knowing what to call it. So,
okay,
but I didn't tell anyone where I was going. I had really a general idea where I was going. I really didn't have the equipment, and where I ended up, I had no signal. The radio in my car didn't even work. And I got myself into a situation where it was the second time in my life that I thought I was just going to be a statistic. I was so far out in the boonies, they never would have found me. I mean, it was one of these incidents. I was driving up a road, and instead of going straight where you could see where the road still went, I said, no, I'll go this way, and I took a right. And I ended up driving on this fire road, and the road was so bad, I literally had to idle all the way.
Right.
You know? I was just, and at one point, my car's doing this. I mean, I'm like riding up the side of a dirt road, you know,
oh, yeah,
on the side of a, like, for lack of a better word, mountain. And it was just one of these things, and I kept thinking to myself, oh boy, did you just screw the pooch on this one? This is not a good place to be. And I was getting nervous. I just kept driving. And as I'm driving, I guess this is about 8 miles in, there's a log in the road. And there's no way I could have driven over this thing. I would have broken an axle. So I got out, And now I did have a 357 with me. I've got a concealed weapons permit, and anytime anyone goes out to do field work, I recommend having the ability to take care of yourself. It's just something I believe in.
Right.
And a lot of people don't. A lot of people say, Bigfoot can smell guns. Well, I've seen a lot of reports where hunters run into Bigfoots more than anything, and if they can smell a gun, it obviously doesn't bother them that much. But anyway, there's this log in the road, and I'm thinking to myself, I actually stop, and I'm thinking to myself, what do I do here? Should I just go for it or not? And I'm like, eh. So I get out, and as I'm getting out, it was like there was complete silence in the woods. There was nothing. I mean,
and what time of day was this?
This was right at right about 12:30 in the afternoon. I mean, it was complete silence. And this area where I was, I'll show you on the map later where exactly where this was, and you'll know it should have been real loud. And I'm thinking, oh, that's a little weird. Then I'm starting to remember all the stories of everything I've read and everything I've heard and all the people I've talked to, and it always starts out, it's never good when it ever goes quiet.
Never.
Never.
It's always a very, very bad sign.
It's always bad.
Too quiet, right?
It was way too quiet. Too quiet. So this log, it was a good size tree branch, and I was able to move it, but I had to kind of rock it a little bit and roll it out of the way. And as I got it out of the way, I'm looking up because I'm thinking it just fell, and I could not for the life of me see the tree from which this branch came. I couldn't. It just didn't make sense because it was good size. So the road was so narrow, there was just no way I was going to be able to turn my car around. Because I was thinking maybe I'll just turn around and go the other way. It wasn't going to happen. I mean, literally, I had a wall here and then, you know.
Yeah.
So I just keep going. And again, I'm afraid to go over. I'm maybe doing 10, maybe. And that's pushing it. I mean, there's potholes, you know, just stuff in the road. It's you know, it was pretty messy. So I go now another 45, 50 minutes. And I look in the middle of the road. And I see this big black fur ball sitting in the middle of the road. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, crap, what is that? And the last thing I'm thinking about doing is grabbing a camera because, I'll be honest with you, I was just kind of scared. And as I get a little closer, I realize it's a bear. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, good. I don't have to worry. It's just a bear. He's gonna leave. I literally sit in my car maybe 15 feet away from this thing. I toot the horn. I know bears don't talk, but the facial expression this bear gave me, it was like he was telling me to go diddle myself. Vance, he looked at me.
We're going to get back to you on that note, Christian. This is Speaking of Strange. We'll be right back. You're here with us on Speaking of Strange, good listener. We're deep in the middle of nowhere. Welcome to Nowhere with Christian McLeod. Unprepared has broken every rule of crypto field work, and he's out there in his Subaru.
The mighty Subaru.
Staring down a bear that seems unfazed and not about to move out of the fire road that you're on. No room to turn around. You're tooting the horn. And let's pick it up there.
Well, I just want to say, to go back to the story here, I think that bear was thinking about mugging me because he knew I had no place to go. Just saying.
Just as we went to the break, you were you gave us a little better description of
I don't want to say that.
I appreciated you describing the bear's posture as just like a dude kick back on the couch, kind of like an Ed Bundy with his
hands. He's an Al Bundy. So this bear's sitting, literally, he's in the middle of the road. Like, you can see where there was, at one point, where there was two tires had driven at one point here. And
right.
In the middle, you know, there's usually a little grass here. He's right in the middle where the grass is. He's, like, slouched over one side. His rear quarters are, like, over to the right, and his front paws are, like, in the front. And he's just staring at me like, what? What? What are you going to do? Nothing. I'm sitting there. I'm using the horn, trying to just get him to leave, and he won't. So I'm thinking, damn, you know, I'm not getting out of the car.
I mean, this is a fire road versus a logging road,
this
right?
Is,
it's not been clear cut around there.
There's
still
nothing.
Wooded.
Yeah, this was really – I've got pictures I can show you later.
Any old growth? Or?
Oh, it was ridiculous. There was I mean, I was honestly – that's the reason why I was driving so slow. I didn't know I was going to run over. I mean, you know, I had to get out another time and move a big rock. I was afraid of running over the rock. I didn't have room to avoid it. I mean, I had to, you know, this is how narrow that road was.
Right.
So I'm looking at this, and there's like a standoff between me and this bear for, I want to say, 5 to 7 minutes. Honestly, I'm just staring, because I, you know, I'm honking at it. I'm, again, you know, I had a gun, but I'm thinking, I'm not going to shoot a bear. I mean, you know, there's just no reason to do it. And then, like, I was thinking to myself, if he doesn't move in like 5 minutes, I'll just shoot one round off and scare him. And then, again, I didn't even feel right about that. Because, you know, I don't think you're supposed to really do that, and I don't really, you know. Because, again, then realistically, Vance, I wasn't even sure where I was. That's how far out of the sticks I got. I mean, I wasn't even – my location, my GPS didn't work. I had absolutely no phone signal, and I was so far out there, my car radio was not picking up any signal. And I have an emergency weather band system on my radio in my car that did not work. But that's something I'm going to bring up.
You kind of, by your odometer, know how far from the closest known point you are. At this point, you're how far from?
I'm going to say I was about 17 miles out
from some place that you knew.
Exactly. And I'm stuck. I'm like, this damn bear's going to move. Well, honestly, right when I was about to roll down the window and just shoot around off in the air, hopefully scare this thing away, the bear comes to attention. And when I say he comes to attention, he moved his haunches under him like lightning. He was on all fours. His ears were like his ears were straight up in the air, and he's looking around. And I watched him. He looked right past me, and he sniffed the air, and he turned around and ran the opposite way. And when I say ran, he was gone. He was gone. So I'm thinking, oh, cool. No, I'm not thinking there's anything there. I'm thinking that was a little weird, but I'm thinking, well, maybe, you know, maybe I'm thinking maybe he smelled the exhaust carb or something, you know, anything. And the last thing I'm thinking is there's something bigger and badder out there, even though in the back of my mind, I'm kind of hoping there is, but
nothing
know.
Changed with your presence
no.
there because you had been sitting
right.
there, you know, it had the standoff had been going on for a couple minutes.
Exactly.
Now,
and, you know, and I'm not in cryptozoologist mode at this point. I'm actually annoyed that I've had to wait to get back to civilization for a bear to get out of my way. So I'm really not thinking a whole lot. So I start puttering along, and I get about maybe 50, 60 yards from there. I just look in the rearview mirror, and I see a log go flying by where the car was about, you know, 45 seconds earlier.
Skidding across through the air?
It was through the air. I saw it in the rearview mirror. And I'm going to say it was probably 8 to 10 feet long, maybe a foot and a half wide. And it had like a branch on one side. And I saw the branch do like a spin. So like in midair, there was like a circle, so it was like thrown like a football. And I got a little, and I was like, oh damn, what the hell was that? Because I mean, if it had just fallen, that'd be one thing.
Obviously, it had been propelled.
It was a force behind it. And then I was thinking, okay, maybe we'll just go a little faster here, because then I'm starting to put things together. Like, okay, the bear just got up and ran away. That just happened. I put my gun on my lap. I got the windows rolled up. And I'm just trying to, you know, not freak out. So I go down a little bit high, a little more, and nothing happens. So I'm trying to calm down a little bit. About 5, maybe 7 minutes after that, I see like this blur on the driver's on my left hand side. Just for like a millisecond, I see like this black flash just go maybe 20 yards away from me, but going the same direction. Keep in mind, I'm basically going in idle.
Right.
Maybe I'm hitting 5 miles, and in a real nice part, maybe I'm doing 10. So I see this black flash just go whizzing by. And then I was thinking, oh, great. What the hell was that? And, you know, then I was getting, like, real nervous. And I kept going, and there was a little bit of flat road where it opened up a little bit. So I was doing maybe 15, 20 on that just to try and get some distance. And after I got out of that flat part, it went back to being pretty rough. I heard this ungodly, I don't know if you would call it a howl, scream. It was like turning the bass all the way down and just blaring drums. It was just, it shook like I could feel my chest through the door and through the window get like almost vibrate. And I keep in mind, all I've seen is just a black blur. I have not seen anything at this point, you know. And I just kept driving. And the long and the short of it is I get out maybe another 3 miles. And it starts to open up into a campground. So now I'm in a campground, and I'm looking around, and I'm like, where in the hell am I? Because I have no idea where I am. And I go down the paved road, maybe another half a mile, and there's this older guy. He's got his 2 grandchildren, and he's fishing. And I roll down the window and say, excuse me, sir. I seem to have gotten turned around. Can you tell me how I can get back on the interstate? And his grandson's about to go jump in the woods real quick because he sees something. And then I hear the grandfather yell at the grandson, boy, I told you them damn boogers is out there today. Get over here by the truck. And I'm thinking to myself, you have no idea, man. So he was nice enough to tell me how to get back to the interstate. And I went home after that. I had a little relaxing drink to calm myself down. But when I got home, I looked at the front of my car, and I hadn't realized I'd gone through like a 10 inches of mud, gravel, so I scrimped up the whole front of my bumper.
Ah, yeah.
But it was okay. I got out of there. I was
Yeah, at least you didn't bust a oil pan out or something like that.
That was my biggest concern. I was worried about, you know, breaking an axle or something back there. I'm like,
That's quite a story. And you still hang around with this guy, Daniel?
Oh, yeah. I'm waiting to get out. I want to go to these places.
Right.
I figure if they run into us, they'll figure he's related to them, so they maybe give me time to get away.
Second cousins.
Are you a believer, yes. Daniel?
Yes, I've had my own experiences.
Anything as dramatic as what Daniel describes?
Not quite that dramatic, no. My first experience actually happened when I was a young child, and it was passed to me by my parents from where I grew up. We had a what we called affectionately the breather, and it was something that I grew up without electricity, without electric, without running water, things like that. And this thing was breathing in the window, and the next day we measured it was at least 7 feet from the base of the window. And when my dad ran out to see what it was, 5 steps, and it was to the end of a 70-foot trailer. Just gone. So that was my first experience.
Wow. Daniel is quite a comrade there, it sounds like, Christian. You guys...
I'm a very, you know, Vance, I'm a very lucky man with the people I'm I've got to associate with.
Well, here it is. You guys are both sharing what I call the believer experience, and people have it in all arenas of the paranormal. That believer experience, one, will turn your entire worldview around. We'll talk a little bit more about it when we get back. Speaking of strange... Darkest Road. We'll take you down that one. Here on Speaking of Strange, I'm Vance Pollock, your host. We're having a little Speaking of Strange Christmas party in here. We got Shelly D. Wright.
So dangerous.
Yeah. Christian wants me to be sure to emphasize Shelly D. Wright, dangerous. Sam the Animal Steel.
All right.
We got Daniel Tiny Hurst.
Thank you for having me.
And we got Christian McLeod. Daniel, before the break, we're talking about the breather.
Mm-hmm.
Where was this at?
I grew up eastern part of Tennessee.
Okay.
I'm originally from my nearest neighbor, not counting the cows in the pasture, was about a half mile away.
Right.
I experienced a lot of things there. A lot of things. Winged things, hairy things, supernatural things. The breather, though, was pretty evident.
I think it's interesting, and I'm glad you brought up the point that you had grown up in a situation where there was no indoor plumbing, no electricity. I often think that a lot of the historical, even folkloric experiences come from a more primitive environment like that. Mm. That the electricity chases it away in some cases. Do you kind of feel, Christian's over here nodding his head, do you think in some ways that the encroaching civilization pushes these things to the fringe or out into the wild?
I think that our technology is probably what's keeping a lot of people safe. I think the humming of electricity probably bothers them. Hypothetically, just use Bigfoot as an example. If Bigfoot, his hearing is so advanced, he's got night vision, he's a big boy, he's fast. But like, you know, if say he has infrasound, you know, a lot of people think that they have infrasound. You know, that's 0 to 15 hertz. You know, so if they can use that, that means they can hear at that level. So if we have, like, the humming of electrical lines or things like that, that probably drives them nuts.
Sure.
So I think it probably is a deterrent, keeps them away. And, you know, there's also electromagnetivity. You know, that probably drives them nuts, too. I mean, that's why they can't keep great white sharks in captivity, is because the electromagnetic resonance of everything just makes them go kind of nuts. So, I mean, not that saying a Bigfoot is sharp, but I'm saying, you know, there's things in nature we don't know about.
Well, I agree, and I'll draw a parallel with a lot of psychic experiences. I mean, what people might generally categorize as ESP or delicate sensory sort of perception is disturbed by all this interference, you know. And I think it's a lot easier to communicate, and people. Without getting all hippie on you, when people say they're going out into the woods to commune with nature, really that's a real thing. You can't sit in downtown amongst the horns blaring and the sirens wailing and feel nature the way you can if you just get away from the power lines out into the woods a little bit. And Daniel's environment. When he's having these experiences growing up, I think is much more conducive to what most people have ever experienced. Except, you know, if they go camping, wouldn't you say that the great majority of people who go camping don't go primitive camping? They're pulling a
glamping.
Trailer.
They're
with
going glamping.
Glamping, and they've got to have all their devices. Oh, do we have Wi-Fi? Do we have our hotspot? Come on. Daniel, the breather, is that something that your family, is that a name your family sort of gave to this character, or is it something that's known in the wider community?
No, it was just ours.
Okay.
And the reason for that is they listened to it for probably 10, 15 minutes, just sat and breathe in the window. It was a steady, deep, rhythmic breath. And if you listen, you can tell where somebody's looking by their breath. And whatever this was looking at my mom. And my dad, he was the type that if you couldn't touch it, feel it, taste it, didn't matter. Wasn't that it wasn't real, didn't matter. He thought it was the cicadas. And he listened and listened and then got fed up with it. And he hit the front door. When he hit the front door, my mom heard five very distinct thumps, like footprints or footsteps.
Right.
And that would have been about 60 feet exactly from that window to the end of the trailer. And it took Dad probably 45 seconds to get around to the back of it, and it was gone.
That's a massive creature. You know, with with a stride that size.
Where Dan's from, the stories of Eastern Tennessee right now are just they're intense. They're getting prolific. Like Eastern Tennessee's become a hotspot for cryptid activity. That'd be Bigfoot, Dogman.
It's probably because it's not still less developed than other places.
Oh, I'm sure it is. It's just, you know, Dan's got another great story about some of the other cryptids he's seen out there. And you just sit there and you're talking to Tiny, and it's like, I mean, he's got enough in his head to write a book. He really does. I mean, the stuff he's experienced, and it's just geographical. I mean, he's literally, like, where he grew up. I mean, it's a hotbed. And it's fascinating, too, because, I mean, here's a very intelligent, very articulate human being that can sit here and tell you about, you know, the time a pervert Sasquatch was looking at his mom through the window and breathing him. You know, I mean, it's but it happened. I mean, it's real. You know, these things happen. And, you know, he's witnessed it. His family's witnessed it. And it's just, it's incredible for me to see how that affected Dan in the years to come, because now he's, you know, a cryptozoologist, paranormal investigator extraordinaire. It's cryptozoology's side thing for him. So it's just an incredible transition on how one event affected him.
It's something I've got to reinforce for listeners, because they're not getting this maybe over the airway. Well, I'm sure that your sincerity is communicating through your voice, but as I can sit here, you know, shoulder to shoulder with you in the studio and watch your face and your mannerisms and everything like this, I am reading nothing but complete sincerity. You are 100% genuine in the events you are describing for our listeners tonight, and I think that's something that they have to keep in mind. You're not just coming in here to tell a story. Occasionally, week to week, I'll come in here with what if type stories, or, you know, this is a fascinating news item and we'll just throw ideas around. But you were talking about personal experiences that are just as plain as a day. I mean, you weren't hallucinating, or you weren't, it was not some flight of fancy. You're out there in the middle of nowhere and have an experience like this, and you were shaken by it. And I can tell even by the retelling
of it. Due to stupidity, I might add. Due to stupidity. Because literally, I honestly, Vance, I never should have been doing what I was doing. I never should have been out there. I told no one. No, I didn't tell anyone. There was zero contact from me to anyone. Hey, I'm going out looking for a spot to take people, you know, when we do the Crypt Encrypted tour. So, you know, it was just... I don't think I could have, the only thing I could have done that would have been any more ignorant was actually get out of the car and go looking for something.
Do you think with the right equipment and the right cameras, the right, if you were prepared for this and had this experience, would you have been able to capture evidence?
I think I would have had something, yes. I think I would have had either hair or a decent photograph. Again, it's hard to explain on how fast whatever this was moved, because it was like, when I say, Vance, when I say it was a blur, that thing was, I mean, I blinked, it was gone. But I saw something big and black moving real fast.
It wasn't just panic or paranoia.
Oh, no.
It's far beyond that.
No, it was beyond, you know, I don't want everyone to think, you know, oh, it's Cryptozoologist, he's a coward, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to, I was terrified. I'm sitting there, I'm pretty well armed. I've got a firearm that'll pretty much stop anything that we talk about in the woods, you know, and I had a couple rounds. I wasn't really worried about that, but this was something that I don't think, one, I could have hit, and two, if I did, it would probably just make it mad. That's why, you know, when you hear these people say, oh, yeah, you know, well, you know, I shot Dog Man with a 12-gauge and just looked at, you know, what the hell are you doing kind of thing at me. And I was like, I tend to believe that. You know, I think their skeletal structure is different, and that's why they can do what they can do. I think that's why they have the muscle mass they have. And I think they just have denser bone structure, and I think it makes them a little more, you know, invulnerable to what would normally take out something normal, you know, regular. I don't think you can shoot Bigfoot with the same kind of gun you shoot a deer with and expect the same, you know, action from the animal. I think he's built tough. I mean, he's just big.
Christian McLeod and Daniel Hirsch sharing some personal experiences with us this hour. I really enjoyed it. We're going to wrap it up when we come back. We're going to talk a little bit about the society and maybe even open the invitation to listeners who have had experiences and would like to... yeah, swap love notes that. And yeah, that's what it's all about. The network. It's Speaking of Strange here on WWNC. We'll be right back after these messages.
Yeah. It's a dark night.
It's a dark, cold night in Asheville, North Carolina. Greetings, wherever in the world you are. We're sitting around a table here in the studio with Sam and Shelly and Christian and Daniel. And as you've heard, we've been talking a little bit about cryptids, that is, anomalous creatures out there in nature. And it's not as phantasmal as some people may spin it, according to Christian. Of course, there's nothing wrong with a good phantasm here and there, but...
not at all.
But some of these things are flesh and blood, according to Christian McLeod. And he even founded a society for like-minded people to meet, discuss, swap information. Tell us a little bit about the society, Christian.
Well, it's called the Asheville Cryptid Society, and you can Facebook us, Asheville Cryptid Society. We have AshevilleCryptidSociety.com if you want to drop us an email, or you can get us at AshevilleCryptidSociety@gmail.com. You know, when I originally came up with the idea of actually doing something, I was talking to our mutual friend, JPW, and I told him what I wanted to do, and he said, well, why don't you think about it a little bit? And we talked about it, and then about a week later, Josh invited me to go have dinner with George Norrie and Tom Danheiser, who are two of the coolest guys walking around in shoe leather.
Yeah, I think most of our listeners have probably heard of Coast to Coast.
Well, I tell you what, I was privileged enough, and this is a high point in my life. I actually, you've got to picture it. We're at this dinner, and I'm nobody. And you've got JPW over here. You know, this is another guy over here that's written all these books. There's all these authors. There's all these famous people.
Yeah, Bill Forsten was there, wasn't he?
Everyone's there. And they're looking at me like, who the hell is this guy? So I start talking to Mr. Norrie. And literally, he spent, and again, I was totally flattered by this. We spent the entire, probably 2.5-3 hours, just me, him, and Tom Danheiser talking. And everyone else is just kind of looking at me like, who the hell is this guy? Why is Norrie talking to
me? What, do you have an audience with?
Yeah, I mean, he's not. I'm just sitting here. I'm getting to talk to the man. And Tom Danheiser, for those people who don't know who Tom Danheiser is, Tom Danheiser is the executive producer of Coast to Coast. Tom is the coolest guy. In the, he is just so nice. He's brilliant. And honestly, I know people think, oh, you know, they listen to the radio and they listen to these programs. George Norrie is a brilliant man. He is keyed up on everything. We were sitting there and talking about subjects. I've been listening to Coast for years, and I'm bringing up topics like Mel's Hole and all this other stuff that he's just looking at me and goes, oh, wow, you really have been listening. And I think the fact he knew that, you know, I wasn't sitting there just trying to placate him. It was like, you know, we're sitting there and discussing stuff, and before you know it, 3 hours goes by, and I was talking to him. I was like, well, you know, I was kind of thinking about doing this, but, you know, I wanted to finish up my master's first and get a little credibility, maybe, you know, get a PhD first and finish that before I start this to give myself, you know, credentials, you know, so I'd be more respectable. And he looks at me and he goes, do it now. Start doing it now. Just keep it honest and just do the right thing and you'll be fine. And I just, after talking to George Norrie and Tom Danheiser and Josh, I started the Asheville Cryptid Society. And the one thing I do, besides give everyone, you know, anonymity, is if it has to be honest. I don't want to be involved with anything, you know, phony or suspicious or just something even.
You're not collecting tall tales.
No, because there's no need to. The stories are great. If someone wants to sit here and tell me that Bigfoot mind spoke to him about playing poker with Jesus and Elvis. That's fine,
but it's not a yarn spinning society.
But it's we scientific method. We collect research, and we investigate, and that's what we do. And if it's a story that pans out, we document it. It goes into the flash drive, and then we move on and collect the next one. You know, we're not. Our job isn't to prove the cryptos are real. We know they're real, but we want to help prove it to people who don't believe it.
We are nearly at the bottom of the hour. Christian, time's flying in here. I mean, when you have a good conversation, good people with a lot to contribute. Daniel, time has just really flown. We got the dark 30 next hour. Doesn't mean that we can't maybe find some themed topics, but people know that the dark 30 is, it's a little raunchy sometimes. Are you okay with that?
I'm fine with that.
Once more, in 30 seconds, how can people get in touch with the Asheville Cryptid Society?
The easiest way would just be AshevilleCryptidSociety@gmail.com or the AshevilleCryptidSociety.com. Or, again, we're on Facebook, too. Another way to get in touch with us is through M&D Paranormal. Tiny, you want to give them that web address and phone number?
Yeah, we actually don't have a website yet. It's M&D Paranormal at End of the Veil on Facebook.
All right. Cool.
Sorry.
No, I'm good.
That works. People are going to reach out to you guys, and we'll follow up.
Can I do one more thing, Vance?
Real quick.
Real quick. For anyone that needs any rental space, please visit the Asheville Masonic Temple. They do real good work, and the money goes to keep the building around. Thank you.
Fair enough. We'll be right back.